Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The 2020 presidential campaign begins today. That's true. But no, let's talk about what happened yesterday in the 2018 midterms. The voters spoke and came out in record numbers to do so. 35 seats in the United States Senate, 435 seats in the House of Representatives, 36 governor's offices all at stake nationwide, almost all of them incredibly tight races leading into the actual vote. And of course, we had state house races here, six amendments to the North Carolina Constitution among the items on the ballot that brought people out to vote. Midterms are historically bad news for first-term presidents, but Tuesday's election results were a split decision for President Trump and for the Republican Party. Democrats recaptured the House, picking up more than two dozen Republican seats, including South Carolina's first congressional district. Republicans picked off Democratic Senate seats to widen their majority there. Democrats also made gains in governor's races, one of the party's weak spots. But the blue wave did not roll through North Carolina, at least at the congressional level. And where Democrats were successful was in the General Assembly, breaking up the Republican supermajority with the flip of Republican seats in the Mecklenburg County area and elsewhere. Voters were split on the constitutional amendments, and a blue tsunami crashed on the Mecklenburg County Commission. So here to break down what voters had to say yesterday and the implications of their decisions, Michael Bitzer, chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College and author of the Old North State Politics blog. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Susan Roberts, back again. You were here all night, weren't you?
Well, 11:30.
Okay. Professor of Political Science at Davidson College, who was here in Election Central last night for WFAE's election night coverage. And Steve Harrison, who covers politics for WFAE, is here as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, there were all kinds of predictions about voter turnout being enormous yesterday. That's what people thought was going to happen. It kind of did happen. What was it here?
It kind of did. Statewide, we're looking at 52%. If we have to remember, we were in a blue moon election cycle, so no U.S. Senate race,
okay. And no
governor's race. So the last blue moon election cycle, 2006, that had 36%. So we were well over, and also well over 2014, which was only 45%. So getting half of 7 million registered voters to show up in a midterm, that's pretty remarkable in North Carolina.
And if you were watching national television yesterday, you saw these enormously long lines all around the country. I didn't see them focusing in here in North Carolina, but they had lines that went for blocks. You couldn't see the end of them. That's good news, but 52%, also good news, seems miserably low.
Well, really not for a national election. Sometimes that's 50 to 66%. So it's for a midterm, I think it's very good. We shouldn't say never in political terms, but this was the biggest referendum on the president that I've seen and heard, and that's the discussion. And I think that's because of the drama associated with Donald Trump.
Well, to a lot of people, this was a binary election, a binary choice election. Mm-hmm. You either were voting for the president and everything he stands for, or you were voting against the president and everything he stands for. Did the outcome of this election here or around the country bring a clear answer to which way the nation wants to go and what kind of a country we want to be? Steve.
I'll say that that I think there's a lot of answers just locally in Mecklenburg County, and the answers there is that the county has moved. It kind of maybe used to be the city was very blue, and now the entire county is. The entire county kind of voted against the president, and you know, one thing that we talk a lot about in elections here is that in Mecklenburg County there is a wedge in the South of Republican voters. And they've always been historically Republican voters, and that's why they're in the 9th District. They're there for protection to kind of boost the Republican numbers. That was all blue last night. And I've never seen anything like that in 12 years. And so right now in the county, there's this little piece of red precincts in Matthews and Mint Hill, mm-hmm. and that's it. So this whole suburban thing we hear about across the country of kind of the suburban revolt against the Republican Party, it showed up here.
I think we have to be careful, though. Suburban in an urban county versus a surrounding suburban county. You take the 9th Congressional District, McCready won in Mecklenburg, but Harris ran up big in Union County. So, I think that's the difference
between the suburbs and the exurbs that we talked about 2 years ago in the presidential election, which are the further out suburbs.
Right, right. Yeah, the further out you get, the more Republican it tends to get.
Well, I think we also need to think about what this represented in terms of the money that was spent, and it was atypical in this district, $4 million plus to $1 million plus. I think it also was one of those elections that also fit the bill with the 9th District, with negative campaigns and ads right at the end, plenty of surrogates.
You had yesterday, and you have going forward, I would imagine, Republicans who are staunchly Republican. They are not going to budge from that. You have Democrats, staunchly Democrat, not going to budge. And yet you had this change, at least in this county, with regard to the Mecklenburg County Commission races, et cetera, where we did have a blue wave.
Sure.
Was it Democrats showing up in record numbers, or did this all hinge on independents here and around the country making a decision toward the left as opposed to the right?
Well, the national exit polls show that if you identified as a Democrat, you voted Democratic 95% of the time.
Okay.
If you are a self-identified Republican, you voted 94% of the time for your Republicans. Independents broke 54 for Democrats. So I think the shift has occurred in terms of, as Susan said, the referendum on Donald Trump. If you support the president, if you think he's doing a good job, you are a 94% Republican. If you strongly oppose Donald Trump, 95% Democratic. That's your split.
So this is simply a response to Donald Trump, or is this a wave that we should look at for future elections that may or may not include Donald Trump?
Well, I think it's we have to look at 2020. As you said earlier, it starts yesterday and maybe a week ago. But I think it to think this signals a new era of bipartisanship is sadly mistaken, because some of the people I heard, Donald Trump had a tweet this morning early about bring it on to the Democrats about if you're going to try to investigate me any further. Kellyanne Conway on CNN this morning said that the president's talks at the rallies were about policy. And I think anybody could say that really is not even an overstatement. That's just incorrect.
Well, Donald Trump needs a demon. He needs an enemy to fight, because that's what he's been doing for the last 3 or 4 years. He picks people out. He calls them by name. He gives them caricatures, and he goes after them. That's what works for him and what works for his base. And you're right. The Democrats are going to have some serious decisions to make about how to deal with him going forward now that they control the House. And last night, the likely House Speaker, now that the Democrats will take over, Nancy Pelosi, called this a new day for America.
Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances to the Trump administration.
Two-thirds of voters told exit polls that Donald Trump was a significant factor in their vote. 4 in 10 voters said their vote was a vote in opposition to the president. Last night, I don't know who said this, but one of the major Democrats said that they had announced their intention to request the president's tax returns. The House of Representatives has the right to do that, and the president must turn them over. Actually, the IRS must turn them over. Is this the right tact to take out of the box? Or is it better to get your policies going out of the box as opposed to be investigating everybody and everything?
What I think is not the best strategy right out of the box is to say anything about impeachment. That's the throwing down the gauntlet.
I haven't heard
nothing,
that yet.
No. The Democrats do not want to do that. And I think if you look at the tone, it depends on who you ask. I think for the Democrats, and listening to Pelosi, it was you listen to what you just played, it was more conciliatory. How can that happen when she's been really the target of all these ads and races? So I think some of the issues that we want, that the Americans said they want to look at, if you look at, I think first was health care based on the exit polls. Second was immigration. And then you had the economy.
Yeah.
And the immigration discussion is not going to be one that can bring any much bipartisanship. And I hate to be so negative.
If I recall the pie charts last night, immigration was the number one issue for Republicans. It was like a number three, deeply distant number three issue for Democrats. Health care was the number one issue. Issue for Democrats, would they be well advised, since this was an election about pre-existing conditions.
Yep.
And even Nancy Pelosi last night said, "Let's hear it for pre-existing conditions." I don't think she meant it quite that well, quite that way.
Right.
But should they be concentrating on beefing up, fixing, whatever you want to call it, the Affordable Care Act?
It would be helpful, I think, for Democrats to have a policy strategy going into 2020 to go back to the American people and say, look, we have tried to accomplish something in the House. May not get through the Senate, may not get past the president, but at least they can go back and say, we've got something to present and can show that, yes, we can govern, because we haven't been governing under a unified party government.
And does it matter what the House of Representatives does, given the fact that the Republicans have not only kept their hold on the Senate, they've strengthened, I think, by two seats their hold on the Senate? Does it matter?
Well, I think it does matter. And I want to mention one thing when you talk about what type of election it was. One of the commentators said this was a realigning election. And as a political scientist, you know it's not a realigning election. Realigning election is one that's strong and long and involves changing one's partisanship. I didn't see that indication at all. The numbers haven't come in, but it's not a realigning election, maybe recalibrating election.
Okay. So would you call what happened in the House at least last night a blue wave?
No.
I wouldn't. Would you
call I never predicted one.
Would you call it a pink wave? Because there are 100 women now in the House of Representatives.
I think it was a pink wave to an extent. You had some women who lost seats, some very important women who lost seats, and not so much in the House, but in the Senate. That was, you had different, there was diversity in the women that came in the House, and that's just wonderful. But you did lose some really strong women in the Senate.
Prior to Election Day, I think the day before the election or the morning of the election, President Trump told Sinclair News, which is a conservative consortium of stations, that he could have moderated his tone and that he would be working on that going forward. This is before the votes came in. So he obviously was clued into something that was going to be happening around the corner that day. What message did he get last night?
I think he kind of got a mixed message. I think, you know, the House going Democratic is going to pose some real issues. They're going to exercise oversight like he has never seen from the Republicans. So that's going to be a major thorn in his side. On the Senate side, he's got some additional votes. He could probably accomplish even more judges getting appointed. So he had a good night in the Senate as well. I think overall, he's still looking at a 45% approval rating. And that is, you know, an area where Barack Obama sat for both of his midterms and got reelected. So, you know, where this poses in terms of how he handles himself in the next 2 years leading up to a reelection bid and who the Democrats decide to go into battle with him, that's the unknown, I think, right
Steve.
Now.
And I think that the president can look at this and kind of spin it in his own mind that where he campaigned, his candidates did very well in the Senate. So, you know, I think you can kind of pivot internally and say, oh, well, you know, we lost the House, but we expected to. But look at all the great things we did. Mm-hmm. And I think in the 9th District, it's interesting. It's a 1,900-vote race. And early on in that first debate with Harris and McCready, you didn't hear that much about the president. Mark Harris didn't really talk about him. And then, you know, they had the rally at Bojangles a couple of weeks ago. And, like, who knows if that made the difference or not? We'll never know. But may have pushed him over the top.
Well, we will come back and we will talk about the 9th Congressional District and where that stands this morning, among other races in the state, in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about what happened yesterday in the midterm elections around the country and, of course, in North Carolina, where we will drill down in a moment here with Steve Harrison, political reporter for WFAE News. Dr. Susan Roberts is here, professor of political science at Davidson College, and Michael Bitzer, chair of the Department of Politics at Catawba College. Let's get these female figures correct with regard to the Congress. I said there were 100 women now in the United States House of Representatives. It's a little more than that, isn't it? Is Michael, you were going through these numbers off the air a second ago.
Well, in terms of the candidates, we saw a record number of candidates running. We will also see 117 at least in the new Congress that is seated in January. So those are new numbers.
Okay.
I think one thing you need to think about in terms of more than just the numbers of women seated is what kind of change that might bring to the agenda and to, and I don't think this is going to be the case, but I will say it, agenda and then civility. I don't think the women are going to act as a circuit breaker on incivility. And I also think, when we see things, an issue that will come up, not related to another Supreme Court justice, but the question of access to abortion and Roe versus Wade, that will take on more significance in the leading of opinion on this issue. Women are also concerned about education and I don't think women are as concerned with immigration. Now, that I don't know. That's, the base. More women running, more women winning, and more women voting, as I understand it, and more women speaking out. But you still had, if we look, I haven't looked at the figures. There was still the Brett bounce that came along at just the useful time for Donald Trump.
Okay. You said a moment ago that you would not describe what happened in the House as a blue wave.
No, I wouldn't. And I think sometimes it's the definition of a wave. And there were several. Ballotpedia gave it in terms of numbers, 40 plus. Some others, the Cook and others, said it was significant and lasting. And another would say lasting with the national message. I don't know that there was a national message besides where do you stand on Trump.
Somewhere this morning, and I'm going to get the beaches wrong. Somebody said the wave was more like the waves off of, I don't know, Hilton Head, as opposed to Malibu.
Yeah.
I just made up the names here, but that's essentially the smaller wave versus an enormous
wave. Some of this we think about today should be about the expectations that people had for this election. I think some of the expectations were for the Democrats just to have a sweep.
So in the House of Representatives, where the Republicans lost control to the Democrats, what kind of Republicans remain? Are these the Tea Party Republicans, the Freedom Caucus Republicans?
I think you will see a much more conservative Republican conference, a group of all the Republicans in the House. I think the folks like a Barbara Comstock, who was generally seen as a moderate, her district was one of the first ones to go. In fact, it probably was the first one to go last night. It is going to be, and I think it's going to be much more of a Trump-oriented and very supportive kind of conference.
So what does that mean for Democrats' ability to get things done in the House of Representatives or make a difference?
Well, they've got a majority.
I don't think it changes. I mean, you had these like moderate Republicans before, but they voted together. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think maybe some of the noise you'll hear will be more conservative, but I don't think there was a lot of like crossover voting before this election, and there won't be any afterwards.
Well, and one of the things, that people are saying just loosely without hard evidence is the candidates that aligned themselves with Trump did better than the candidates that distanced themselves for Trump.
Well, in this state, in District 10, Patrick McHenry won re-election. In District 11, Mark Meadows, who leads the Freedom Caucus, I believe, won re-election. Ted Budd beat Kathy Manning in the 13th District. And Alma Adams, she's a Democrat, and she won because
that's a Democratic district.
The big district that people were and this was the one that people were supposed to be following across the country. I never heard a single mention of it all night long when I was flipping around. And that was the 9th. Mm-hmm. I checked this morning just before I got here. Dan McCready had 136,478 votes, 48.8% of the vote. Mark Harris had 138,338 votes, 49.4%. That's a difference of 1,860 votes as of early this morning. And yet late last night, here's what Mark Harris had to say.
We understand from our opponent that he does not intend to make a statement tonight, but is going to sleep on it, I guess. And we will wait and see what the days ahead hold. But as you can see tonight, Mark Harris has been elected as congressman of the 9th Congressional District.
So a difference of 1,860 votes. A guy named Jeff Scott came in with 5,042, or 2% of the vote. Will Dan McCready ask for a recount, or are we still waiting for things like, I don't know, absentee ballots to be counted in this?
So the McCready campaign, they really gave no indication. They just said last night, I think when they came out and spoke, there were four precincts left, so they had a little bit of hope that they would get some votes there. But they didn't even give any details on, well, we think we have absentees or we have provisionals. They just said, well, it's not done, and we'll talk again tomorrow. And as of now, I don't think I've seen a schedule or when they are going to give a statement. So a little bit up in the air.
Well, I think we also need to remember, when we've been talking about the importance of the women's vote, Harris, one of the sticking points was his reference to biblical womanhood. And so that may not have mattered to enough women. I'm sure it mattered to many women in the 9th District.
The 9th Congressional District in North Carolina, as it is presently drawn or currently drawn, is gerrymandered to favor Republicans. There's no question about that. And yet, look at the difference. Look at the tightness of this race, 1,860 vote difference here. What made the difference? Was it the president coming to stump for Mark Harris, or the fact that it's already a Republican district, or the fact that Dan McCready raised more money than anybody in history in this race, probably, and that got him to the point where he could be that competitive?
I think all of those things. I think the natural tendency of that district to be a strong Republican district meant that Democrats had to overperform in terms of getting even this close to it. Winning it would have been even a harder stretch, but this was going to be a 50-50 kind of a district, and what you saw was basically the Battle of Mecklenburg, where McCready won, but not by as much, and Union County, where Harris won substantially, but didn't perform as well as Trump did.
And I was just going to say, remember that Trump won the 9th District by 12 percentage points.
Yep.
That's a lot.
Yep.
And so they cut it. They brought it from 12 all the way down to 1.
Right. Yep.
And
that's a pretty good swing. And
I
mean,
huge.
if you want to talk about a blue wave, that kind of swing could be considered
There's just a tiny bit of Mecklenburg County. It's southeastern Mecklenburg County that is part of the 9th District, and McCready handily won that part of this district. He also pretty much won everything but Bladen County and Union County, which was Mark Harris's biggest district, Union County, which is where he made his speech last night. How can that be? If you're a Democrat and you take all the other counties in the district except for Bladen and Union, and include Mecklenburg, how do you lose? How do you not win?
Because, you know, counties like Richmond, like Scotland, have a total of 13,000 and 9,000 votes coming out of them. That's how you lose.
And it's interesting, like the map, I was just going to say, you know, for so many elections, like national elections or state elections, like the map is always like a sea of red with these little blue cities that have a ton of votes. And so it's kind of like flip last night in the 9th, where Union County is this, you know, it doesn't look like there's all these blue counties,
right,
but Union had so many votes.
Well, and I think, too, just this adds to the lore, and that is the 9th District, however configured within, you know, it's not a radical shape, but it's sometimes it's now well over 50 years since they've elected a Democrat to the 9th District. So that will continue to be something that anyone running for office would have to contend with.
Well,
let's see what the history of that district is.
They are likely to redraw this district.
Sure.
Are they not? One of the contested districts that was allowed to stand for this election?
Yep.
So they'll be redrawing this anyway,
we think. And, you know, based on what the U.S. Supreme Court decides on this.
So what message was sent last night? What are we to take from this, the tightness of this race, because at this moment, at 9:31:46 in the morning, as far as we know, Dan McCready has not conceded. What are we to take from this?
I think, you know, the inherent, from my perspective, the inherent reliability of voters is if you vote for President Trump, you are voting for Republicans down the ballot. And that carries over from one election to the next. I mean, the correlation between the two votes is so tight and so firm that that shows to me it is all about partisan loyalty. It's partisan tribalism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a Democrat to come this close, that was a good night.
Why is the 9th congressional district so close when you have the 10th and the 12th, the 10th to the 11th and the 12th solidly Republican or Democrat, and in the 13th, Ted Budd, the Republican, beat Kathy Manning, the Democrat.
Open seat election.
Open seat.
And also open seat, and also because Mecklenburg County has changed. Like, yeah, the seat was drawn to have South Charlotte give the Republicans a lot of votes. And so it was kind of there, like the gerrymander includes Charlotte for a reason, but Charlotte has changed. And so I think if the seat has to be redrawn, there's going to be a challenge of like, okay, how do we get more Republican votes? We don't want to go through this again. How do we do it? And it's going to be hard because on one end, you've got Cumberland County, which McCready won. On the other hand, you got Mecklenburg, which he also won.
So we have an email question from a listener. In 2012, Democrats running for the U.S. House received 50.1% of the vote, but we had 10 Republicans and 3 Democrats elected because of gerrymanders. What happened this year? What percentage of North Carolinians voted for Democrats, even though we will send 10 Republicans to Congress again?
It's still early. Some of us haven't had a whole lot of sleep, so we haven't been able to put those numbers together. But I promise that in the next 24 hours, that question can get answered.
We'll get our UNIVAC computer
yes,
to work on that. That's our up-to-the-minute equipment that we have here because we're public radio.
Well, and I think I'd like to also see, you know, how the money factor. You just can't say, oh, more money was spent or less money was spent. But, you know, money wasn't Beto O'Rourke had tremendous amount of money and Cruz won. I thought Cruz was going to win all the time. Amy McGrath in Kentucky lost despite money. And here we have, I think, McGready losing, even though there was that much money.
You think he will concede?
Well, I don't know if he'll concede, but it doesn't look like he can make up the difference to me at this point.
Let's move to the General Assembly. This election was poised to tip control of the North Carolina House. All 120 House seats and 50 Senate seats were up for grabs. Democrats needed to flip 4 House or 6 Senate seats to break the Republican supermajority. They did break the supermajority.
They did.
How did they do it?
I think they, again, concentrated on suburban districts. The ones here in Mecklenburg, 3 seats in Wake County, including the appropriations chair, went down. I think there were some individual dynamics in some districts that people may not have realized that were playing themselves out. But I think it was a kind of a contained suburban revolt in some ways against Republicans at the state level.
Well, let's look at District 41, because this, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, was a surprise. This is Jeff Tartt, the incumbent Republican, losing to Democrat Natasha Marcus. Is this about the tolls? What is this about?
I think the first reason that seat was redrawn, and so it kind of focuses on Lake Norman, and it was redrawn to come into Southwest Charlotte. So they had to add a lot more Democrats to it. I think that was the main reason. So the demographics were tough for Jeff Tartt. And then secondly, I think then the toll lanes were a part of it. The Democrats, I think, when they looked at the 6 races in the General Assembly in Mecklenburg, they thought that would be their easiest one to pick up. And then so they won that, but then they also won a lot more.
Also, I think, too, it was sometimes you look and there is we're trying to connect Democrats to Republicans. And sometimes campaigns, individual campaigns do matter. And she ran a very smart campaign. She had a good amount of money and she already had name recognition. And I think that was part of the factor. And she was a woman running in this election. So I think that Natasha Marcus had a good campaign, had a vision, and I think she pretty much stuck to message.
And what was the message? Do you remember?
I think her message was looking at cleaning up the state, education, very strong on education. Mm-hmm. Education has always been a big ticket issue in North Carolina.
And Jeff Jackson in District 37, the incumbent Democrat, was one of the people who helped lead the campaign to break up the supermajority by Republicans in Raleigh.
We're going to be able to go back into session in a position to sustain the governor's vetoes, which reshapes our state's political landscape in a way that allows it to take a big step closer to the center, which is where our state is. We're a true 50-50 state, and we've been governed by the far right for this entire decade. And that is, as of now, over.
Is he right?
Or
will there be a rebound in 2 years?
Who knows what's going to happen in 2 years? Who knows what's going to happen in 24 hours? I think the numbers, you know, we've now gone from supermajority status to 66 Republicans in the state House to 54 Democrats. It was originally 75 to 45. And in the state Senate, it's now 29 Republicans to 21 Democrats. It was 35 to 15.
And there were two Republican incumbents that lost locally in District 104 and 105. Scott Stone, a Republican, lost to Wesley Harris in District 105. And Andy Doolin in District 104 lost to Brandon Lofton. Why?
So I think part of that is that they are both in those South Charlotte precincts that are really changing in terms of voting patterns and who lives there. They're also in the 9th District, so they got kind of swept up in a lot of the Democrats' voter turnout. And, you know, the state party put money in those races, but not as much as the Rachel Hunt race and the Christie Clark race. So I think they felt like those races were in the bag. Wesley Harris ran kind of an interesting campaign. He has a PhD in economics, and his whole theme was I'm not sure of the exact phrase, but like vote for the nerd or nerd team nerd or something like that. That was catchy.
We like that. Professors like that.
Yeah. But you know, like I'm not sure how much that really resonates, right? I mean, I think, you know, I think that he was kind of carried along.
Of course, House districts and Senate districts are not the same. They're different. They're drawn differently. But you have these Democrats taking over from Republicans in these House districts in Mecklenburg County. And yet you have Dan Bishop winning in District 39, Senate District 39. Mm-hmm. That seems confusing to me. If you're going to vote out Republicans, why aren't you voting them all out?
Well, I think, the power of incumbency generally tends to help in that regard.
Well,
Scott Stone was a fairly new member. But I think, again, the dynamics of what was happening, perhaps out of the control necessarily, could be a part of an explanation.
20 seconds.
So real quick on the Dan Bishop race, his opponent had a DWI from 10 years ago, they pounded him over and over again, and they were not going to lose that seat.
Okay. That's Steve Harrison, our political reporter here at WFAE, along with Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College and Michael Bitzer from Catawba College. We come back and talk about the constitutional amendments and other things on the ballot yesterday in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the postmortem on the 2018 midterms locally here with Dr. Michael Bitzer from the Catawba College, Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson College, and Steve Harrison from WFAE News. A lot of these races in Mecklenburg County, I mean, the results trickled in like it was 1830. Are they counting them by hand? What are they doing? I mean, it took forever for some of these races to be counted in Mecklenburg County.
Well, I applaud the fact that we don't have, as far as I know, any allegations of fraud. But at some point, and we were talking, we were here looking at the state races for hours, trying to draw conclusions from early voting. And I had some bellwether. I thought, oh, well, you know, District 2, District 13, if these flip, the early voting, I said, this is going to be a tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just took a matter of, I don't know, an hour or so for everything to come in.
Yeah. And Mecklenburg was slow.
So was Wake, evidently.
Wake was slow as well. I thought Meck was bad, but Wake took the prize.
Is that because Mecklenburg County and Wake County have the biggest populations and there's a lot to count? But I mean, for the longest time, as you mentioned just a moment ago off the air, Wake County at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, 0% of the precincts reporting. Zero.
In one of their state house districts, it was up until 10 o'clock that we still only had the early votes.
So what's the problem there?
You'd have to ask.
And should we care? This is the media caring because they're on the spot.
trying to report the results, and the results aren't forthcoming. So it's just us complaining, or is it
electorate
voters complaining?
It's not only the media, but it's the voters who have cast their ballots and want to know. They want to know. And,
right.
and yes, we're in an age where we want instant gratification, but we have technology. We have all these things to be able to count these things, I think, a little faster. But I'll leave it up to election administrators to...
Well, we've got 2020, and the turnout, let's just say, is going to be tremendous, and we need to have something in place.
Well, we'll have new voting machines in 2020, and they don't know what they're going to be yet, according to Michael Dickerson. They have no clue what we're going to be using to vote on in 2020.
Or what some of our laws might be.
Right, exactly. Well, let's talk about the changing demographics, evidently, of Mecklenburg County, which led to these switches in the House and Senate in North Carolina and Carolina's General Assembly, but really will have an impact on the Mecklenburg County Commission. I mean, the city government, the county, the city council has been Democrat for a long time, but the Republicans controlled the county commission pretty much. Yesterday, they were wiped off the map.
So, yeah, that was a big surprise. They had the county commission was 6-3, three Republican seats, and the city council is 9-2 Democratic. And so, yeah, you had Jim Puckett, who lost to North Mecklenburg.
Is that a big surprise? He's been around for a very long time.
I think so, especially because – I'm sorry to interrupt. He was on the right side of toll lanes. So we had, you know, these two House races with – or the two legislative races with Jeff Tart and John Bradford where toll lanes were a big deal. Jim Puckett was – I say right on.
He was against.
He was against them. That's what I meant. So there wasn't any particular wedge issue against him. Bill James has been on the commission in South Mecklenburg for more than 20 years. Matthew Reidenhauer is the newest of the three, but he's not controversial. You never hear people who are like anti Matthew Reidenhauer. The numbers got them.
So you get Bill James, who's been on the county commission and been very people who have not lived here for a long time do not understand how controversial Bill James has been historically. He said things that were not politically correct for a very long time before it was fashionable to be not politically correct. And he survived.
Yeah.
Now he doesn't. What's changed?
Well, and the fact
that he's been very quiet. Excuse me. He's been very quiet in recent years. So he's no way has been coming, maybe from his website. But why now?
Well, we would be saying, had he won again, and here's Bill James winning, because, again, with that echoing that Trump rhetoric. And now we're saying, you know, we're surprised at the opposite. So I think it is a question to ponder. I think it is something. And maybe it's just you want to change in terms of younger, fresher faces. I can't say, as someone that wasn't watching that closely, what kind of campaign he ran.
No campaign.
Yeah.
Well, the Jim Puckett race is surprising because of the margin of between winners and losers here. Elaine Powell, the Democrat, beat him 56-44%. That's a big margin.
That's outside competitive status for us who study these things.
So is this... We know we're seeing all of these apartment buildings go up in Mecklenburg County, not just the city of Charlotte, but most of the city of Charlotte's a big part of Mecklenburg County. Is that what this is? Is this a bunch of younger people who are moving in who have no historical connection necessarily to the people in office who've held these offices for a long time, or who simply have a different political point of view and a different outlook on life, and they're making their presence known?
Yes to both, I would say. And in studying and looking at both North Mech and South Mech in terms of the precincts, these precincts have been shifting ever so slightly for the past several election cycles.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be very deep red. Now they are basically purple, and they are starting to transition into light blue and into deep blue, which is what the rest of the city of Charlotte is.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, talk about the changing precinct. So if you go down in the very, very south part of the county, precinct 148 votes at Community House Middle. That's at the very bottom part of Mecklenburg. That has become a very bellwether precinct. I think it voted for Hillary Clinton barely. It's 9% Asian. So we kind of sometimes think of like South Charlotte as this homogenous white area. And when you go down that far, it really isn't. And I think you're going to see more and more of that.
Yeah.
Can you extrapolate what happened here out to the rest of the country, given this urban-rural divide that you guys, as political scientists, talk about all the time? Is this just the manifestation of that?
I think nationally it is. I think North Carolina has a slightly different dynamic when it comes to surrounding suburban counties than the rest of the country. We tend to talk about those at the national level as kind of being the battlegrounds. Mm-hmm. The surrounding suburban counties in North Carolina, Union, Cabarrus, Gaston, others around Wake and Guilford, tend to be much more Republican because they are much more white. Now, the dynamic could be shifting there of demographics, and that could make it more like the nation as a whole.
But you still have Mark Meadows, who is the poster person of the Freedom Caucus. Right. And so that's also going to be a factor for a foreseeable future in North Carolina. And that may not be just demographic. That's ideological.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to these constitutional amendments. We had six of them on the ballot in North Carolina, and two of them lost. The two that lost, the two that voters said no to, were the ones that all of the living governors were against. And they were one that would change appointments to the elections and ethics boards, how those would be made, and change how midterm judicial vacancies would be fulfilled. The governors were objecting to this, as I understand it, because it was another attempt by the legislature to reduce the power of the governor, no matter who the governor was, because Republican governors and Democratic governors were against this. And evidently voters saw it from their perspective, yeah. Right? Why?
I think it was a pretty healthy campaign against, there were specific ads that said vote no on the last two amendments. Mm-hmm. There was the Nick Six campaign, but I think that one was much more effective in terms of capturing the voters' attention on it.
And could we perhaps say that was representative of perhaps a sentiment that we need some bipartisanship? Because that was maybe even more so than the content, the fact that they touted all the governors, former governors, mm-hmm. Are united in this. And so I think, actually that if we did exit polling, that might be a factor in what happened.
So what do you think Phil Berger and Tim Moore are thinking? Because they were both, Tim Moore was reelected. I'm not sure Phil Berger was up for election, was he?
Yeah, he was up.
He was reelected too. What are they thinking this morning because of this vote down of their two big amendments?
Well, I would think that they would say we won the other four. We got photo ID, voter.
That's the big problem.
Talk about photo ID then, because that was one that people said yes to, and I don't have the margin of victory.
55 to 45.
Okay, so it was fairly wide margin of victory here. It is true that people around the country, when you poll them, are pretty much in favor of voter ID. Because they see it as something, it's no big deal. Everybody has a driver's license or you get along in other places, but you have to have it. We can do this here. Okay. But the enabling legislation for this constitutional amendment has not yet been written. And they're going back into special session, are they not, mm-hmm. to write the actual law, the actual amendment. We voted 55 to 45 on something we don't even know what it's going to say. Does that surprise you?
I wish I could say yes, but I think sometimes the devil is in the details. I mean, Pat McCrory, when he was running for governor over and over and over again, if I can remember one thing, it was you have to have an ID to get on a plane and these sorts of things. And North Carolina is one of 17 states that doesn't require identification. So I think that people weren't reading the details.
But are they likely— given the history of our legislature, of course, the supermajority has been broken now, but are they likely to sneak something in there that will discourage voting or make voting more difficult for certain members of our population? Well, are they likely to attempt that?
If they do, they will be found back in court because we will have a federal court case, I would assume, challenging that particular law. Even though it has been enshrined in state constitutional law, there is something that preempts state constitutional law, and that is federal constitutional law.
Okay. We'll have to see. When are they going back into session for this?
Steve, I think
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So once they write it, that's it. It's in the Constitution. correct?
Well, it would be okay. So the amendment is in the Constitution, but the enabling legislation to define, well, what is a photo identification? Okay. What will be properly authorized? Okay. What will the state accept? Those are the details yet to be written.
And that, then the question there is, do you go strict photo ID, which is driver's license, passport, military ID, or do you go a little broader and allow a debit card with a picture, or neighborhood
or Costco, ID,
your Costco card?
Exactly. Yeah. And I would have a feeling we will be going on the strict side.
Yeah. Okay. So there was an income tax amendment, too, that passed. It does not reduce taxes. It simply puts a ceiling on how high taxes can rise in perpetuity or until they pass another amendment down the road. Do you think the people voted yes on this because they thought their taxes were going to go down?
Well, I think...
Which they are not.
Yeah, I think we need to step back, and I don't know all the details, but about all the brouhaha of the titling of these amendments. And they made them such that they looked really non-invasive. And or they looked really positive. Who would not want the right to hunt and fish?
Yes. I'm not even sure why that needed to be in the Constitution. Who's arguing against that? Anybody?
I think there are some that believe the protection of gun rights and PETA issues.
Well, but the right to hunt and fish doesn't preserve gun rights. You can use a bow and arrow.
Yes,
you
can.
You throw that fish thing in there.
And Marcy's Law, which, of course, got help from Kelsey Grammer, which increases victims' rights. I don't think anybody
6238.
That. Yeah. So all of that made sense. But do you think people understand what they voted on? And will this bootstrap the state going forward, this income tax cap?
It has the potential. Colorado faced the same thing. And when they hit the financial recession, the Great Recession, it really hurt their state government operations. But
so no blue wave, you say, in Congress. No. But Bernie Sanders, I guess he was the campaign chief in 2016 for Bernie Sanders, Jeff Weaver, says essentially that there is a blue wall either coming our way or being built as a result of what happened last night.
What you're seeing now is that what we call the blue wall, the Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, is being rebuilt by the Democratic Party. And I think it bodes well because if you look at 2016, if Hillary Clinton had won Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, she'd be the president of the United States.
Do you agree with him?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Rust Belt. It was 2016 was the Rust Belt election going from Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Democrats are showing them the error of their ways? That's essentially what he's saying there.
Yeah, but, every campaign, every election is different. And you can't make a lot of basis of judgment on the previous one.
So we're looking at the Georgia race, the governor's race, which is still not decided, and she will not concede. Stacey
Abrams
will not concede against Brian Kemp. You look at the closeness of the Ted Cruz Beto O'Rourke race, although Ted Cruz won. You look at how close it was in Florida for the governor's race between Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis. Is this because of the deep divide that really exists in the country, or due to the propaganda machine that is spilling out lies and mistruths on an hourly basis? In other words, are voters voting because they're simply ticked off because they're told to be ticked off? Or are they really ticked off?
Well, I just want to, jump in with one thing. I do think there was a pink wave of sorts, or really a pink wave, but I do think you also saw a rainbow wave. I mean, the first openly gay man elected to governor of Colorado, and I think more candidates running. No, I believe some people are upset and fundamentally so. And I think most of the time you can see, even if you just, go beyond reading David Brooks, there is that hidden tribalism, and maybe it's not so hidden.
So in the 30 seconds we have, what do we look for going forward? What are the next 2 years going to be like?
So I'll say locally, I think the city council holds elections next year. There are two Republicans. I think they will have to really start campaigning and raising money. And then the year after that, Dan Bishop will be on the ballot again. He will draw a strong Democratic opponent.
Okay.
Yeah, I think divided government is going to prove to be divisive.
No bipartisanship, not any improvement in civility, unfortunately.
And the game begins between the Democrats in the House and Donald Trump
in
the White House.
And it's very important who the Democrats put at the top of the ticket.
Okay. Susan Roberts, Dr. Michael Bitzer, Steve Harrison. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.